Are you going to play right now?
Yeah,
I love this song. All right. Taylor, what are you going to do during this song?
I'm going to sit here
and enjoy.
I'm going to do my
yeah. Talk to me, though. You need echo or anything? Good.
I don't think so.
I'm glad.
Let me set up.
By the way, I mean, this is no secret. The song Hero is about Kurt Cobain, right. I loosely based on Kurt Cobain, right? No?
It's kind of more about just heroes that are ordinary. It's like ordinary, everyday.
Wouldn't that make it
working class hero kind of crap?
Yeah, but are heroes ordinary or, in other words, are you saying that they all disappoint you?
No, not at all.
It's just that they're regular people.
I look up to regular people more than I look up to
celebrities.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. See, I have a whole different...
I think it means something else.
Me too. I have a whole different feeling about that song.
What's it mean, Robin? Put me on the couch, man.
I think it is about Kurt Cobain.
Maybe.
And you found out that your hero was just an ordinary guy and he couldn't handle it.
All right. Hi, everybody. This is Welcome to Your Finals and Years, episode 15?
Do you want to run that one back only without Conrad dropping a bunch of stuff in the background?
Sure. Hey, everybody. This is Welcome to Your Carlson Years, episode 15, I think. We got James and Luke here. How you doing, guys?
I'm also down with the sickness.
And we are recording this as the first period of the first round of the playoffs has started, and it's the day after the draft lottery. And just before I hit record, we were talking about whether or not we give a shit about any other teams playing. And
I think it's fair to chime in and say I was not talking about the Carolina Hurricanes like they're cute, like you sick fucks.
I was just saying to Luke that, like, I was watching the first period of Tampa-Carolina. Tampa's up 3-0. Or Tampa-Columbus, sorry. Tampa's already up 3-0. And, like, in the first 6 minutes of a playoff game, every team, like, forgets what got them there. And they
have
to go out and send a signal by, like, launching themselves horizontally at Victor Hedman to, like, say they're not going to be intimidated. And then just immediately give up, like, a shorthanded breakaway and go down 1-0. So,
well, it happens.
That's the Tortorella difference, baby.
Hey.
It's good to see that Columbus is not allowing their, like, two decades of mediocrity to get inside their own head.
Does anyone know, like, what their franchise playoff wins record is? Is it 4?
Like total ever?
Yeah, like haven't they only ever won one series? I don't fucking know anything about Columbus. Like,
they haven't won a series. They haven't won a series in their history. I think if you add up all of their playoff wins from different series, you get enough wins to win a series.
Yeah, I thought
they had won once. Damn.
Weren't they the team that was like Columbus for a long time was just like Rick Nash and no one else?
Yeah.
Like, the fact that you can name, like, multiple players on Columbus that aren't just Rick Nash and or, like, Brandon Dubinsky is technically what makes this Columbus team especially good, allegedly. But I think it just means that they're just better than having two guys because now they have three.
But they've had Bobrovsky for a while. Like, you'd think you'd just, like, steal one round at some point. Damn, I'm looking them up right now. Lost in round one 4 fucking times ever.
Yeah.
Damn.
Man, I feel bad as well. Like, you know, you watch a really bad team all season and you watch, like, Zingle having a good season on a bad team and you're like, you know, he's pretty good. He's got a great shot. He's an underrated playmaker. I like Zingle. I wish him all the best. And then watching him in this series is like watching him trying to jump over a wood chipper or something, and you're like, oh, he didn't make it at all.
Yeah.
Zingle running straight into, like, Victor Hedman, who reaches out and pushes him on the forehead, and he falls over.
Also, Bobrovsky's all-time playoffs save percentage is .891, so...
It's pretty good.
That's the tail of the tape on that one.
I'm sure he'll be really, really good once he signs a 7-year deal in Florida.
Five playoff wins in 24 games. That's a spicy meatball.
Man, I see 2016, 2017, they finished that year with 108 points and got turfed in the first round.
brutal. I want them to do well, you know? Like anybody. I was just about to say anybody who roots against them has got to be some kind of monster, but
some kind of monster. You know what? I'll own that. I'll own that. I was out bear hunting in Russia when my son was born.
How are we feeling about, okay, speaking about underdogs, how are we feeling about Leonard,
Louis, shut up. That's
enough. How are we feeling about Leonard being like this, you know, whose politics are terrible, but who, you know, is sort of the feel-good story of like, you can become a better person with effort. And he's, you know, here. He's here leading the Islanders, who have more points than the Leafs, who stole away John Tavares. Like, how do we feel about this? Are we rooting for Leonard? Are we indifferent? Do we want him to fail because he likes a president who wants to kill children?
I think it's good that Robin Leonard is personally like healthier now, because but in terms of like needing for him to like have any professional success in the context of his like Trump hat wearing ass fuego political takes, like I think I'm glad you're doing better is as far as I'm willing to go on that one, but I also like that, but also fuck the Leafs, so that's gotta count for something too.
Yeah, anyone who's playing the Stanley Cup contender Leafs, you know, is extremely cute for that round, exactly, but like, you know, the Leafs are they're cup contenders. I mean, that's what you say when somebody comes third place in their division, right? You're like, these guys are going to win the fucking. That's I know from the past. As if the Sens ever finished third in the division, they'd be like, these guys are going all the way. It's just normal. It's just normal hockey prediction shit. Not the Tampa Bay Lightning or whatever.
Well, when we said that, we had the system, which was actually good. And right now they've got the Leafs have Mike Babcock being like, well, I've got 19 left-handed defensemen. What are you going to do?
Yeah. We were talking earlier today in the DM thread about
keep it low,
like, which is invitation only, that how like a team with unlimited resources and all of the smart planning in the world and the supposed like best coach in the world, he's out here, like, after getting Jake Muzzin, he's out there with the media going, well, you got to play with the players you have.
Oh, too bad. Too bad.
Okay.
I know it's past the trade deadline, but if Nick Lidstrom were to come out of retirement, do you think he could drag that Crescent Moon who just ate a lemon looking ass coach to another cup, or is that, I don't know how the CBA works.
But. He's trying to make it happen with Ron Hainsey, I think, who's 38 or something crazy. Like it's amazing that they let Babcock continue to coach, especially if they get eliminated by Boston in the first round again this year, which I desperately want. I was telling Conrad before we started that's basically the only series I'm going to watch because I hate myself deeply. And the whole time I'm just going to be on my couch furious at these two teams that I hate. And as long as the team that I hate slightly less wins, I'll be like, good. That was a good use of my emotional investment and time.
Oh, Boston's so cute right now. Like, forget about it. Like,
yeah, I have always liked Brad Marchand very much.
Well, having watched the team we like play Boston, it's like no one's going to be out in these streets saying that players like Marchand or Bergeron or Tuukka Rask or even Zdeno Chara are like playoff pretenders, right? Like those is done been there. Like, I don't think they're going to crumble because fucking Frederick Anderson diarrheas his pants and then they have to put in like their third string goalie instead. Like,
mm-hmm.
So the series I want to ask you guys about, and you know, feel free to slap me in the face for this question, but are you guys going to watch any of Vegas versus the Sharks?
That's like watching your two exes get married to each other. Like, what? Why would I put myself through that? And not only that, but it's also a West Coast series.
Right,
so
right.
I would be staying up until 1 a.m. to watch the freshly extended Mark Stone try to beat up on my other favorites on Erik Karlsson. I don't want to see that.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, I mean, the last time they played, I think it was like 7-5 Vegas, and it was an extremely fun game.
Oh, I bet the hockey was amazing. But you know what? I don't watch hockey for aesthetic reasons. I watch it for like deeply screwed up personal reasons that have something to do with my strange emotions and psychology. So that's the, like whatever you're about to say, just no to all of that.
Yeah,
I do not agree.
Hockey fucking sucks. Like, I'm not going out of my way to watch hockey. It's fucking terrible.
So yeah, James and I have tennis to watch. It's French Open time soon.
Hell yeah.
So that answers my next question, which is, you know, are there any other series you're going to watch? But I guess that's that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you could talk me into watching maybe like Calgary versus Colorado, like a series that I could have no opinion on, nor could ever have an opinion on, mm-hmm. and just watch that series and be like, oh, I hope that Brady Tkachuk's brother does well, and all those huge wads who wanted our first round pick to be a first overall in Colorado are unhappy. I could see myself having a nice time with that one.
So that's a good transition to the draft lottery.
Yeah.
So my favorite part of the draft lottery was when the NHL accidentally leaked the results like an hour before the actual draft lottery, and then continued to like draw it all out, even though everyone knew that it was Chicago, Rangers, and New Jersey.
Everybody knew the globalists control the draft lottery. Chicago Blackhawks, long-running corrupt politics of that city.
And this is mainstream stuff, folks. You can look this up. This is on CNN. This is on NBC. Like, this is confirmed. This is confirmed. It's on the news.
Like dueling Joneses over here.
Because the first round pick's making the Frogs gay.
We're only 3 minutes away from going into dueling Jordan Peterson's at this point too, and that's when things are really going to get turned up.
Oh no! Whatever shall we do? Okay. Can I just say something serious about the drafts being rigged?
Because
I know a lot of Colorado Avalanche fans were saying that today, who are extremely not mad online.
Oh, I've been having a great time with them. Just really bringing my day.
Too bad. Listen.
Rigged in favor of New Jersey?
Fucking Joe Sakic, brain genius, never trade Ottawa for a lotto pick. Let's go through a little bit of history. Remember in 2011 when they were in like fifth and they fell to sixth?
Yeah.
Then last year they were in second. I forgot about this. And they fell to fourth. And I think we were all just like ready to walk into the ocean and no one even noticed. And it's like, you should just give that, you should trade someone else for that pick, because there's no fucking way we're going to win the lottery. That's just not in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys also saw this is like the fifth year in a row that, or not in a row, but fifth year that Taylor Hall's been on a team that won the draft lottery.
Pretty sick.
Yeah. I wish him nothing but success. That's a long-suffering man right there.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? But I've heard of what he's done at stages in Kingston, so...
Woo, girl!
I'm going to say that maybe he deserves it. This just could be some karmic retribution.
Save it for the DMs, you know?
he's getting traded to Columbus, for sure, at some point.
Yeah. So go ahead. Please, speak on it.
Oh, no, I think it's interesting that New Jersey won the lottery, because really I think it might be a deep state effort to ensure that people remember that New Jersey exists at all. Like name four New Jersey Devils. Like they've got Taylor Hall, because Taylor Hall's there. They've got Nico Heeshire, the guy they won with the last draft. They won because Taylor Hall made them win.
Is Corey Schneider still the goaltender there?
that seems right, so we'll go with it. And then, I don't know, like Patrick Elias, I guess? Like,
what?
To say? No, I made that one up, but like, you know what I mean. It's some guy like that.
What's Scott?
Travis Zajac. Like,
yeah, that's the guy I was thinking of.
These guys, it's impossible to have a take on.
Whenever I look at their lineup, there's always like a few players that I can't believe aren't like 50 years old. You know what I mean?
There's a guy named Miles Wood who signed.
Right. The porn star.
Sounds made up.
Oh, you know who's on this team is Stephon Mason from our first rebuild.
Yo, how many games did he play?
Which, by the way, he's 26 now.
Yo, Eric Greiba?
No, really?
So he played 10 games for your New Jersey Devils.
Yo, oh, you know that he was back in Binghamton for the rest of those games, though, right? Grimes made his triumphant return to Binghamton to be on the Binghamton Devils. Think about that.
0 points, but a respectable 10 penalty minutes. Yo, listen to this buttery rounds Colin White. They got Colton White.
What the fuck is Higgins?
The Kroger Crunchy of the NHL. Oh, he's Binghamton Devils gang. Yo, shout out to Binghamton.
So, what were we going to say, James?
I was going to say, like, look, we'll talk about the New Jersey Devils for, like, the next hour or so. But, like, how do you guys feel about that, like, dropping to fourth? Are you in that, like, because I saw some people who were extremely mad online today being, like, don't get it twisted. Like, this is still a horrible trade. Like, just refusing to, like, ever feel, like, remote relief from the pain. But, like, do you feel like it's a wash now that we got Tkachuk fourth? Like, it kind of couldn't have worked out better for a terrible situation, in my opinion. But, like, what's your, like, initial reaction to this?
I still think the trade is justifiable. I know it didn't work out. Like, I'm not trying to argue that the trade worked out. But I think when we look back, we have to sort of say, well, is it justifiable at the time? And like, Ottawa gave up a first round pick, a guy they weren't going to re-sign, and a prospect for a player who they thought was better at that in that position. Duchesne had 70 points this year. Turris was a healthy scratch at some point. So like, you can argue that. They were right in the sense that like Duchesne is better in that position than Turris is.
Yep.
Like it didn't work out. Obviously, you don't want to be given
what?
Up. What? But like, you know, I do think you're right. I think it's like the best of a really bad situation. In the end, it ended up being they gave up the fourth overall pick in the 2019 draft, Kyle Turris and Shane Bowers for Duchesne after they just went to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Columbus is probably going to end up being like 19th overall pick or something, plus Abramoff. Like, that's not terrible. It's not a great trade, but like, it's not going to cripple you for a decade or something.
I swear to God, like the last seven of these we've done, it's always James being like, how do we feel about the Duchesne trade? And we always come out on the side was, well, it didn't work out. But like, who was to say, like, that's why God invented horse races. And so, yeah, basically, I agree with everything you just said, Conrad. And for me, like, I think that losing the lottery was just an amazing and deeply important moment for the culture in general, because, you know, it had been getting a little spicy, especially. So first of all, Brady Tkachuk gets taken fourth overall and everyone hates him immediately. And so the fact that like Brady Tkachuk has turned out to be not only extremely good, but also pesky in a good way. And also James's son, you know, those are all positives. And now that like, we wouldn't have even had a better pick this year, making the whole decision on whether or not to keep the pick or punt to this year, like that whole thing's a wash now. We can move on. We came out even. Mm-hmm. Like we bet it all. We bet all the chips on black and then we lost. But you know what? Then we bet it all on black again and we won, and now we're right back where we started and we're walking away from the table and we're gonna act like that counts as victory. So yeah, catch me in the catch me in the streets taunting Avalanche fans for the next month.
Who called like Brady Tkachuk being really good with Mark Stone, and then we trade Mark Stone and Brady Tkachuk is better? Like, he's fucking awesome. Like, I was one of the skeptics. I mean, I didn't think he was going to be bad or anything, but I was like, you know.
It's hard not to think like players aren't benefiting from playing with Mark Stone. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's just like Brady Tkachuk. I can't wait for Brady Tkachuk plus 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Like, he's going to be the worst to play against.
And since this is the impressions episode of the Scotch cast, like, we can do our best Mike O'Kane and say he was only 19 as well. So, like, so lots of growth, both literally and, you know, just skills wise to look forward to from Brady.
You're only supposed to blow the bleeding doors off. Yeah. The other thing is he showed in the second half or whatever, like post trade deadline portion of the season that, like, yeah, like, there's a lot of beautiful Mark Stone setups. I watched that, like, all 22 goals video today because I have a very healthy relationship to the Ottawa Senators. And, yeah, the second the post-Stone half of the goals is, like, really showed you, like, no, as long as someone is firing the puck at the net, I will find that puck and put it in the most disgusting looking way possible. And it's I've been waiting for a player like this forever. It's really exciting.
He's going to, I mean, I absolutely agree. He's going to be that type of player who the next time Ottawa's in the playoffs in a few years and they're like the eighth seed and they're playing against a team that's like on the year five of their rebuild and they're stacked. And then Tkachuk is going to score one of those, like, soul-destroying goals where he just, like, gets on the ice and runs straight into the goalie and it bounces off of his face. You know who used to do this all the time? Was Nick Foligno, where he'd, like, score from his butt and, it, like, some, like, the Penguins would be like, oh, that's fucking bullshit. Like, we did everything right. And, like, Nick Foligno, like, smashes in through the plate glass window and, like, you know, they go home, like, completely disparaged.
Do you remember that goal that Derek Brassard scored in the last minute of, I think, maybe game four against the Rangers to tie the game? And it was just, like, someone took a shot from the point, and then it, like, went through, like, went off of three different players, and then it went off of, like, Brassard's, like, chest, and then bounced off three more players and into the net. Mm-hmm. That's just Brady Tkachuk forever now.
No,
just all just like the worst, the worst like net crashing goals.
There's two things about Brady Tkachuk's season that just got me like praying for the playoffs sooner than later. Like, and it was that last game they played against Edmonton at the end of the year where Tkachuk scored two goals. The first one was from behind the net, and he banked it off of like one of the Edmonton like plug defenders' skate, and like kind of made him kick it in a way that like was either a complete accident or a stroke of genius, and like only Brady Tkachuk will know. And then he won the game in overtime, which I think the Sens were losing most of the game, and he won the game in overtime on a. It was like him and Balcer's rushing in and Tkachuk chooses to take the shot and it just kind of trickles through Talbot. And as one of the defenders is trying to save the puck, he basically kicks it over the line. So there's like these two infuriating goals. And then there was another moment. It was one of the last games of the year against the Rangers. I saw an isolated camera sequence of Tkachuk just getting in everyone's face and like referees having to push away Rangers players being like, not worth it, man. It's not worth it. And I'm like, this is like game 80 of the season where they're in the last place. And like, this guy is still getting in everyone's kitchens. Like imagine like game 3 against Boston, you know, like someone's getting under Brad Marchand's skin for once. Like, it's going to be amazing, win or lose. It's gonna
the more
be
I think about it, the more I think about Brady Tkachuk, the more I think that he's the opposite of Mike Hoffman. In that, like, Hoffman is, like, he scored 36 goals this year. He had 70 points, and everyone's like, yeah, but he sucks. You know, like, he's not a good player. Like,
every coach has tried to get Mike Hoffman traded. That's just a fact.
James Cameron playing him on the third line on a team that, like, can't score. It doesn't matter where he plays. It doesn't matter who he's playing for. The coach is like, yeah, you know, he can put up 70 points, but, like, that's not the point. He's terrible. And, like, Tkachuk is like, exactly the opposite of that, where I feel like Tkachuk could have a 30-point season, and, like, coaches would still be like, yeah, you know, sometimes it just doesn't go in for you. But he's doing all the little things right.
Yeah. Yeah. And
was that supposed to be a compliment? I'm not sure I'm supposed to feel about what you just said.
I'm not really sure. It's just like maybe something to learn about hockey is like what coaches look for. I don't really know. Like, I definitely think
it's not just coaches though. Like,
it's also James.
Well, that's important. And like, shout out to me. But like, I kind of get what you're saying in that, like, I saw at the trade deadline, like, Florida was shopping Mike Hoffman. And I was like, yeah, you know, when you just shop a 30 goal scorer you just got, like, what the fuck? Does this guy just walk into the locker room, look at the coach, and is like, I'm going to fuck this guy's wife? Like, I don't, like, what is with this guy? Whereas, like, yeah, I could see Brady Tkachuk having a sophomore slump next season, like, scoring, getting 30 points total, and me being like, make this guy the fucking captain. Like, I don't know. It's just something about him. Yeah. I forgot Hoffman got traded at some points this season. Also, I forgot Mikhail Bodker was even on the team a lot this season. So
it's just like Stalinist Russia shit at this point, where like Hoffman and the people he was traded for have just been disappeared from various state photographs, and it's like they've become an unperson.
Yeah.
Can you ever prove that Mike Hoffman was in Ottawa? I'm not sure you can.
Well, yeah, looking forward to what new Florida coach Joe Quenneville is gonna do with him now that he's like Joe Quenneville moving down to Florida for $7 million a year.
Seven? Yeah. I thought it was five, and I thought that was nuts.
I think there's like a whole bunch of weird bonuses in there where if he like wins a couple rounds in the playoffs, that becomes his new baseline salary.
I refuse to believe anything weird is happening in Florida.
It's the first time I've seen a contract like that where they're like, you make $5 million a year, but if you win a round in the playoffs, you don't just get a bonus. That becomes your new salary. You get a $2 million bonus, and then you make $7 million a year. Florida's new ways to lose money.
Before we move away from this, I don't want to completely absolve Pierre Dorion about this. I do feel the need to highlight that I think us loving Tkachuk and taking him at fourth and then having this fourth pick being a wash is kind of like a clumsy Kluso-esque waiter version of like pulling this off, like making the right decision. The same way like he traded Erik Karlsson for Magic Beans. And it just so happens that, like, Shabbat puts up, like, a 55-point rookie season. Like, I think they thought Shabbat was going to be good, but, like, I didn't think he'd be, like, viable replacement for Karlsson. Like, I feel like he's really lucked out a few times as GM. Like, it could have been, like, absolute clown shoes shit and, like, you know, they happen to lose the lottery and stuff, so it absolves him. Like, you know, it would be much tougher to give away the first overall pick no matter what, you know. Like,
well, wait until next season when we have a full season of our center depth being Pageau, White, Zach Smith, and Tierney. You know, like this year we were dead last by like a good 6 points or something like that. With a half season of Duchesne and Stone,
and you gotta say that first half of the season with them was fantastic. Like they were really good with those guys.
Like I do feel like a little like itch of optimism when I look at like all of the picks and all the prospects. But next, it's pretty funny for Melnick to be like, next year we challenge for the playoffs, and you're like, that's not how this works,
man. I'm gonna go off on that one because I am so tight about this. Like, you can, like, by what who has done this? Who has, like, who has finished last 2 years in a row, only gotten one top five pick out of that, and then been like, oh, yep, guess we're done sucking now. Like, that's not a thing. And if you try to make it a thing, I'll be even more mad, because we should be trying to target the 2020 draft, because that's the one we've got all the picks. And let's face it, Ottawa's not going to be that much better than they were this year. So they've got a good chance of picking very high again. So just, like, accept, maybe this makes me the sucker here, and if it does, that's fine. But, like, I'm just going to accept the suck for the next year and get excited about it. That's right. I'm going to go all in on the tank. I'm like, well, losing is good now. Like, that's my take. I they finally did it. They, like, Big Brothered me in, like, room 101, and, like, I love Big Brother now. I love the rebuild. I'm like, that's the end. Like, congrats, you converted me to the rebuild. Don't then turn around and be like, well, we're done with that losing stuff, so you can forget about another high draft pick. No, I want a high draft pick. That's good. That's how you get stars. You need stars to win, because as much as I like a lot of the pieces that Ottawa has right now, I'm not sure that they've got the high-end guys in the prospect pool that's going to, like, push them to the level of, I don't know, second in the division.
I like how you guys think the Carolina Hurricanes are cute, but you say stuff like that. Like, who's the fucking star on that team?
So that ties into, so first of all, they have they've got a pretty, like, underrated defense core with guys like Justin Falk and Dougie Hamilton's up there too. So I like Carolina because they're a team that understands they operate under very tight financial restrictions. So they have only, like, a $60 million salary expenditure each year. But the way they get around that is by just being like, all right, it's expensive to pay for shooting talent, so we're just going to pay for guys who are good at the Corsi and hope that we just, like, outshoot guys to victory. And so I'm not saying it's the ideal way to build a team, but I'm just saying, if you accept the fact that Ottawa is going to be operating under financial restrictions, that would be a cool thing to try. I mean, that's my hot Carolina take.
Basically, they pulled off cost per point. You know, like, that was Melnick's.
Yes.
Like, you know, we're going to be cost per point leaders, and they pulled it off. And, like, I think that, you know, they're a team that it plays right into the wheelhouse of the kind of people that we interact with on Twitter a lot, where it's like, they built a team really smart, very smartly, you know, if you only have $60 million. And that's totally respectable and awesome and fine. And also, they play, like, a really fun up-tempo game. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the opposite of that is, like, Washington giving, like, Alex Ovechkin $100 million to score 50 points every year, like, as his hair turns gray, shooting, like, incredibly from the same spot every time. And you're just like, oh, okay, like, you know, so what am I going to watch on my Tuesday night? You know, maybe it's Carolina. Like, they are, like, I've watched a few Carolina games, and they do play up tempo, but, like, they can't score, because that's the market efficiency, is that if they did score a lot, you'd have to pay a lot for those players.
You don't believe in shooting talent until you see Carolina not have it. And you're like, oh no, shooting talent definitely exists.
Yeah. Like, outshoot the other team, like, 52-31 and lose 2-1, you know, like, I think they have, like, five guys with at least 20 goals, which is good. You know, if they had a 40 goal guy, then they'd have to pay him, like, $8 million a year or something. But yeah, there are times when you're like, if I'm not watching my home team and I'm just watching some other teams that I don't really care about, then I probably want to watch, like, you know, the Roger Federers of hockey, and I'm going to watch, like, Alex Ovechkin, like, laser beam it from the same spot for 8 years in a row or something. But yeah, I do think that, like, you know, someone's going to write a book about Carolina someday, and it's going to be, like, a super interesting audio book to listen to.
So, got to hear both sides on that, but, you know, like, well, Luke, if it quells your nerves at all, I don't think that Eugene Melnick talking cash shit into a microphone will make it so that we will, you know, be on the precipice of unparalleled success next year with I don't even know who our first line center is. So I think you can enjoy the suck. And you know what? The suck is way more fun next year because they're actually going to have the first round pick, like a lottery pick if they do badly. That's what the hell of this season was. It's just like all we had was like praying that they don't finish dead fucking last. And then they did. And that's all we had was losing the lottery. It was, losing the lottery was good for once.
Yes, that's right. Also, like, this is exactly my point. Like, now, it's like, next year is like, great, Brady Tkachuk outstanding in 5-4 Sens win. I'm going to be like, great. And then it's going to be like, Anderson allows 6 goals in first period and 7-1 loss. It'll be like, also amazing. Like, it's only positives from here on out.
Yeah, I mean, Ottawa, obviously this isn't insightful, but like, Melnick just keeps completely shooting his own foot off completely, where he's like, you know, the main critique of this team for years has been that there's no plan. And then it's like, we're going to go for it in a year when we don't have we're going to go dead last in the year when we don't have our first round pick. Next year, we have our first round pick and we're going to compete for the playoffs. And I'm promising you 5 years of unprecedented success. Like, why? I don't know who his audience is. You know,
I also don't even believe in plans in the context of hockey necessarily. I think you just have to like do like just incremental steps to make your team better until they win the cup. I think that's what Tampa Bay's done. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Washington did. And I think that if you have a plan, you might miss out on the opportunities that occasionally pass you by. Like, I don't know, trading Cody Ceci for Taylor Hall. I'm just like making stuff up off the top of my head. So
or an opportunity like Cody Ceci's contract is over and just let him walk. Like, who cares? Who cares?
Yeah, there's like levels to the game. Like, level zero is don't do dumb shit, and that comes before level one, which is do maybe smart stuff. Like, let's talk. Like, we're still making level zero errors here, so that's like being smart's totally out there. I'm not even prepared to imagine a reality where that happens. I'm just saying it would be nice.
The only scenario in which I am on board with Ottawa trying to get back to the playoffs next year is if they somehow, like, if San Jose doesn't re-sign Carlson and then they somehow like go after him, or like if Duchesne comes back or something, and like, not that Duchesne is good enough to like lift the last place team to the playoffs, but if Ottawa goes into next year with, you know, $40 million worth of cap space and decides to go after a couple of decent free agents, which I think there are a few this year, maybe then.
So when I was in high school, I used to always think, why don't players ask to be traded at the trade deadline? Their team get a bunch of like assets for that trade, and then the player just re-signs with that same team later on, and his team gets the player and the assets. Why doesn't that ever happen? And the fact that it might actually happen for once with Matt Duchesne again has me asking, why not? Let's go. Like, I mean, maybe Matt Duchesne's not the guy you want to sign long-term compared to, say, Mark Stone, rest in power King. But, I mean, is anyone, like, Matt Duchesne's surely good enough that, like, we're not going to be, like, unhappy that he chose Ottawa, right? Are we so jaded that we're going to be like, oh, Matt Duchesne, like, we're too good to be excited about the possibility of Matt Duchesne resigning?
Well, the only thing, I mean, my main thing with re-signing Duchesne before the trade happened was, like, you don't be given, like, if you give up a lottery pick, like, at least fucking keep the guy that you traded for, you know, like, it's almost like at a worst case is Phil Kessel. Toronto traded 2 first rounds and a second for Phil Kessel from Boston, right? And then they essentially gave Boston Tyler Seguin and Dougie Hamilton and like Magic Beans or whatever. And all they ever got out of Phil Kessel the entire time, like, he was pretty good for Toronto, but they like hated him. And they got, what, 7 playoff games? I seem to recall like a pretty memorable playoff series that they once played. But like, you know, they gave up a lot for not for some regular seasons or whatever. But once Duchesne was traded, I was kind of like, well, if this team is rebuilding, which they clearly fucking are, like the origins of the, or the like motivation behind the rebuild is debatable, but like if they're rebuilding, maybe not sign the 28-year-old guy for 8 years, like $8 million a year or more or whatever, like maybe save that cap space for like presumably the kids that will be coming off of their ELCs in 3 years, and maybe like, yeah, that extra mustard player that helps you like in a position of weakness, probably right-handed defense.
I mean, I'm looking at some of the UFAs in this offseason. Ottawa's going to have a ton of cap room, or a ton of every kind of room. And they got to get to the floor. So.
No coach, you know.
Basically, yeah.
Exactly. Extremely not paying their coach $7 million. Go on.
Yeah, or have it a normal one.
They're going to be coached by one of those drinking birds. And then, so you've obviously got your big ticket, like Erik Karlsson, Matt Duchesne, you know, I don't know if those bridges are burned, but you got like players like Jordan Eberle, you know, I don't know if he's making $6 million. He's 28, you know, he didn't even have 20 goals on the Islanders.
Nice.
Obviously forgetting about like guys like Panarin who are going to go they're going to go play for the Rangers and make $9 million a year. You know, Tyler Myers, a 28-year-old defenseman, like making $5.5 million.
Is he right-handed?
He is. And then, like, I don't know. There are people in this list, including Mark Methot, although he only played like 9 games. I think he might be done.
Mark Methot. Oh, is he the like cement truck with the 3 wheels that?
Yeah, who is absolutely built for today's game? Yes.
Yo, yeah. Yo, rest in power, Mark Methot. Though the Orleans God, you know, we had some great times with him, and you know, leaving him unprotected at the expansion draft, not looking so bad at this point. You know, like God's working on all of us.
Say what you will about Mark Methot in general, but I think you can't deny that he would have been a better option as Erik Karlsson's D partner than Johnny Oduya 2 seasons ago. Like, I think we can all agree that losing Methot was objectively bad. So, yeah, get well soon.
There's a bunch of like Islanders players, all of whom are like just seem to be like randomly generated by like NHL 98's algorithms. You know, like,
Ziggy Palfy's available.
Yeah, I don't know. Like Ottawa could be vastly different next year. Obviously, I'm assuming we're all hoping like Duclair is going to be re-signed.
Yo, the Duke. Let's talk about how the Duke is cute.
He looks great.
Like,
I don't know if he's actually good, but he looks good.
I mean, I think it's a bit of a like good reference that John Tortorella hates him. Like, I'm kind of like, yeah, well, let's give him a real look here. And like, I don't know, I really like the way that dude plays. Which, again, to my last point about John Tortorella hating him,
he's a super fun player. I feel like there's maybe a little bit of like Zingleism going on here, where it's like, you know, he plays on a terrible, terrible team and he gets like lots of quality chances and they lose 4-2 and you're like, ah, who cares? They're bad anyways. And then
I'll watch that.
You put him on a playoff team and like he just like runs into the wood chipper. Like, but you know, for what's he making? $600,000? Like,
and it's like $600,000 in like that money that the locals use in Cuba, like that they won't even let you use.
Yeah, I hope they re-sign him. I saw some tweet the other day that he was saying he feels like he's a good fit in Ottawa and he wants to stay.
Honestly, too, like, I kind of like the story. Like, remember how, like, Turris was sort of like this castaway guy when we got him and he sort of found his footing in Ottawa and became an important player? Like, I don't know. I kind of have, like, a little bit of a feel. Like, listen, I want this guy to be in our family. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you want people with chips on their shoulder with something to prove on your like rebuilding team in year two. Absolutely.
Also, Anthony Duclair is still only 23, so if you're worried about him, like, is that like still a young guy? Like, you can absolutely sign this guy for like 4 years and not have to like not bat an eye in terms of like what it means for, you know, the rebuild, quote unquote.
If you would ask me,
it's only positives here.
If you would ask me who is older, Duclair or Stephon Mason, I really would have struggled with it. But Stephon Mason is 3 years older. One of our vaunted prospects from the first rebuild.
Yo, speaking of like getting to the floor, I was reading a Bruce Garriock column today. Oh, shout out, friend of the blog.
Thank you for unblocking me, Bruce.
Classic unblocker of Verata and I, Boo Boo. We love you. It was like, I was reading, I don't know about you guys, but when I read anything by the guy, I hear his voice reading it to me. And there was just this throwaway line at the end where it's like, and the Senators will also be looking to try to re-sign Brian Gibbons. And I was like, yo, don't you mean, like, don't you want to add after that, like, I done wrote a lot of goddamn rhymes, but this time I must be out of my goddamn mind. Like, what the fuck? Like, I understand you got to get to the floor, but it's like a fucking 30-year-old that like is playing for his absolute life. Like, you're gonna like what? I don't even know why that line made it into that article. If I don't know, that's totally fucking bonkers if they do that.
Gibbons is also like, that was the most confusing. Like, I still don't really remember how we got him. Like, what was the trade that brought him? And then he was like the only player down the stretch to be scoring consistently.
So first of all, like, do not be fooled. Brian Gibbons, not good. He was on like an extreme PDO heater through the last part of the season. Like, do not, like, I was like, I 100% ironically inventing a group that I was calling Gibbons Hive. And by the end of the season, I was like, you know what? This is only 90% ironic now. But that 10% of me who's like, Brian Gibbons, though, is not, like, ignore that part. Just,
yeah.
You don't need to make the career AHLer / journeyman / tweener forward Brian Gibbons a part of the team going forward, unless, I don't know, it's like a 2-year contract at like league minimum.
Yeah, as far as I can tell. He did have 14 points in 20 games on a completely sustainable 28% shooting percentage.
Sounds normal.
Yeah, he's 30 years old. I think he could just book it. 5 years. Give him the Hamburglar's contract.
How was Brian Gibbons never in the ECHL? Like, this dude, like, ever, if you're a listener, stop what you're doing and look up Brian Gibbons on HockeyDB. Like, look at this guy. He looks like the ECHL. Like, my man's from Massachusetts. You know, like, he's 5'8", you know, like, got a chip on his shoulder. Like, shout out to this guy playing in the AHL the entire time.
He looks like Jim O'Brien's brother if you refer to Jim O'Brien as the handsome one.
Yeah. He looks like the guy who got dumped for Jim O'Brien. Like, damn.
I just want
to... Although, he's also 5'8", though, so, like, let's respect the fact that your dude's out here being short and still having, like, an NHL career. Like, he's going to get a pension.
That's what I'm saying. Like, shout out to him, but, like, honestly, he's not cute. What about your man's Nilsson Schmilsson? I'll start things off. Thank you. I have rough feelings about this because, honestly, the community respecter is in full effect. Like, can I get a motherfucking moment of silence for somebody who's finally, like, you know, unabashedly not a piece of shit on the team? You know, we got burned with the Hamburglar contract, you know, that didn't work out. And then, you know, Galactic Brain somehow forced the team to sign the late Mike Condon to a completely unnecessary deal. What bugs me about Nilsson is, like, I feel like this is the backup goalie you kind of just acquire that they should have given that contract to. Like, but they won't, and they probably shouldn't. But in another timeline, it would have been a good idea.
You know what's funny is that so Vancouver trades him for basically nothing, and immediately they get into, like, the hell world of, like, well, now we need to figure out our goaltending situation. Like, they're running with Markstrom, who used to be, like, the best goalie prospect in the world.
I remember them days.
And, you know, I think he's played, like, okay, but he's, like, a pending free agent. They don't have it. I think they have Ryan Miller as their backup.
And they got your man DiPietro from the 67s in the hopper, although he's extremely far off. But
yeah, so I mean, I don't know what was motivating them to trade Nilsson, except, like, I guess there's just nowhere for him. And he's a, you know, he is what he is at this point. Like, he's old enough that you can, you know, he's not going to suddenly unlock all this potential. He's kind of like a career, slightly below average goaltender, from what I understand, but I don't know. I kind of feel like that's the guy you sign to a 2-year contract when you're in year two of a 5-year rebuild.
Yeah.
Like, find, like, a really nice guy who, like, occasionally can go on a hot streak and give you some hope.
I think it all comes down to how much of a believer you are in, like, Mike Condon's RoboCop stem cell hip at this point. Mm-hmm. Because if you're like, modern medical technology is a miracle and Mike Condon's better now, you're like, thank you for the fish, Anders Nilsson, good luck in future endeavors. And you're like, Condon's still completely washed, we need another guy to back up Anderson, then maybe you sign him. And I think what happens with Anders Nilsson is going to be just 100% dependent on how Sens management feels about Condon.
Yeah, I'm feeling slightly burned by Milan Mikhalik's, like, made a long journey from Milan to Stuttgart to have, like, his blood in his knee replaced with, like, a RoboCop's blood or whatever happened to him a bunch of years ago, and then, like, he came back and you're like, it makes me sad to watch this dude play hockey. Like, I'm a little skeptical about the redemption story, especially after a fucking calendar year of, like, no one talking about anything being specifically wrong with him.
I mean, I guess, you know, so he's already signed. So, I mean, you're already paying the guy, or I guess insurance is paying the guy, you know, millions of dollars. So if there's ever a time to kind of be like, go for it, like, just try and come back.
Right.
This is it, right? Because if he is what you thought he was when you signed him, then, like, great, you got yourself a new starting goaltender. And if he's not...
Starting goaltender?
Well, I don't know. Yeah.
That's not what I signed up for here. Like, but go on.
Yeah, so if he's your 1B or whatever, like, you know, if he is what you thought he was, then great. And if he's not, well, you now have another blue chip prospect to, like, add in year two of your rebuild. You know, like, and, you know, he made a commitment to the team. You can be like, well, you know, we gave him his chance. The worst case scenario is taking, like, a pretty decent goaltending prospect and throwing them in to the worst team in the league and
yeah,
destroying their will to live.
Yeah, I agree. And I see a lot of people, I don't know if you've been on this website, twitter.com, but people be having opinions on there and they're like, don't waste your time re-signing Nilsson. Like, we got all these goalie prospects now. And I, look, I'm not trying to act like I'm better than everyone, but let's move on. But, like, I think we, or many of us, might be a little horny that, like, the Sens have more than one goalie prospect, which is, you know, you could say we have three, which is three more than usual. But, like, at the end of the day, you know, Gustafsson is, like, 11 years old. Högberg has had his first, like, breakout AHL season, which is great, but it's, like, one good AHL season. And Decord is, like, you know, for all intents and purposes, I think his ceiling's higher, but, like, let me bring up the case of the people versus being horny over Matt O'Connor, who, you know, just won city comptroller in Bridgeport, Louisiana. Like, congratulations.
Yeesh, that wasn't me. I don't know what you're talking about. I definitely didn't think Matt O'Connor was good. What? I mean, this is why it's so frustrating to hear stuff about, like, next year, the Senators allegedly competing for the playoffs, is because if you just accept the suck and say, this is another tank year, it's fine, like, the goalie decision doesn't matter. Play Anderson 82 games. I don't care. Like, yeah. play Nilsson, who's slightly below average, or play Condon, who's slightly below that. It's fine. It doesn't matter. It's like the stakes could not be lower for this season if you accept the suck. Also, shout out to your man Hogberg for not putting it all together until the Senators went out and acquired another even taller Swede.
So Ottawa's going into year two with, like, I guess, three blue chippers. Like, Chabot is not really a rookie anymore, but Chabot, Tkachuk, who, you know, I guess he's got a season under his belt, so he's not really a rookie either, but Tkachuk. And then you got Brännström, who is...
Sorry, how do you say it?
Bonestorm?
Yeah, that's the traditional. Sorry, not to nitpick, but... You know.
He's Snowball 2, we agreed last podcast.
Who's hurt right now. I hope they just are letting him recover for the next 5 months.
Get well soon.
We want you to get well. But after, you know, three, don't rush it also.
What you know, who else are you, like, at least mildly excited about after those three? Because I got to admit, like, I haven't really... They'll put, like, Balcers in, or they'll put Abramoff in, and for, like, one game at the NHL level, and they'll play on the fourth line with, like, Tierney and, like, maybe get a shot.
And, like, pretty sick.
But, yeah, so, like, I don't, like, have you guys seen any more, like, footage?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was at a game, you know, earlier this season, saw a guy take his NHL debut, you know, Bath Drakerson scored a fucking goal in his first game. You know? No, let's talk about Bath Drakerson, man. Your man just got, like, all rookie team in the AHL, for what it's worth. You know, I think he had, let me just call my non-Christian Rolodex here. 58 points in 56 games in his rookie season in the AHL. Like, that's straight out of the queue. Like, and I remember when he got sent down, he didn't score a goal for, like, 10 games. And he had, I think he missed a little bit of time, but, like, man, over a point a game, only a couple of games left in the season. Like, that's pretty remarkable season. Like, I think, and plus he looked really good in the NHL too. Like, I don't know. I think that he's kind of the, like, blue chipper prospect that Fun forgot. Like, I think, you know, we're pretty self-depreciating type fan base, but it's like, I think if any other NHL team had, like, a dude who just turned 20 or whatever, like, having a over a point per game rookie season in the AHL, they'd be feeling pretty good about him.
I'm going to one-up you one here and say that the guy that no one's talking about, but they should, is Logan Brown, who started out slow in Belleville and now has 41 points and is a plus 18 in Belleville in 54 games. And the kid's only 21 still. So, you know, this guy's got the vision in the hands, and he's 6'6", and he skates like a slower Jason Spezza. What's not to love?
I was just going to say, like, Logan Brown, if he works out and he's on a line with Brady Tkachuk, like, future iteration, like, it could be incredible.
Oh, that's so amazing to think of.
Yeah. Yo, 6'6", 220 pound Logan Brown putting it together with Brady Tkachuk. like Ottawa just becoming the most annoying fucking team to play against. Like, yeah. Bring back Jarkko Ruutu and just put him in there in the lineup somewhere. Jarkko Ruutu coaching.
I love it.
Brady Tkachuk is Jarkko Ruutu that fucks, basically. That's what I... no, like, if you start to look at some of the players that are starting to be accumulated, and, you know, we'll see a few more next year who make the jump, like maybe a JacobBernardDockers.com. you know, like... Sometimes I think about, like, hey, when Bone Storm comes up, you know, we'll have Bone Storm and Shabbat. That's, like, pretty exciting pair of defensemen to have in your decor. And then I completely forget about, like, the pretty impressive, like, short season that Christian Wolinen's had. Like, then you're starting to get into, like, okay, this team has, like, three good defensive prospects. Like, that's not bad. like I always say, I remember the days when you look at, like, the Binghamton Senators and be like, I guess I'm excited about Nick Foligno working out. Like, there'd be really very little going on down there. Like, we're now at the point where you, like, when was the last time you thought about Philip Schlappick? But, like, we've seen that guy get NHL minutes and, like, look pretty decent, you know? And Nick Paul seems to finally have figured it out a little bit, which is kind of cool.
We had a lot of years of, like, players drafted 21st overall, where we're like, if everything goes to plan, like, this guy was projected to go 16th, but we got him at 21st. So maybe he's, like, a second line winger instead of a third line winger. You know, we had a lot of years of that. And now it's like Logan Brown is an afterthought being drafted at 11. You know, like, that's a pretty fucking decent pick.
What else is cool? What's depressing? What's on your mind?
I've been trying to find a good reading series article for the podcast. And there's this Don Brennan article. Yeah, that's right. Don Brennan article. The headline is just legalization of tailgating should be toasted by senators, which is just a perfect, like, Venn diagram of, like, terrible Ottawa Sun politics and terrible Ottawa Sun sports writing. It should be in a museum.
Yo, give up the ghost, Don Brennan. We know you're McScoop. Like, we know you're running that McScoop account. By the way, a listener, if you don't follow McScoop, the news dog, on, you know, Twitter.com, hell website, it's you're not really a true Canadian. I'm going to say it.
Here's a line from this Don Brennan article on tailgating. Without tailgating, you might go to a game having decided to abstain from suds that night. Once you have a taste of it, you'll never abstain from tailgating. It's like, all right, settle down, Don Brennan, we get it. Like, you know, Luke how to party.
Luke Percy, LinkedIn.com, look him up, he's on there. Have you been to see American-style gridiron football? Correct.
I have. That's right.
At the professional level?
Correct.
And did you do any tailgating?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Because I've heard tailgating is extremely fun. And, you know, I've never been to see, you know, National Football League, American-style gridiron football. But when somebody is like, oh, I went to a Bills game and, you know, I was tailgating, and it's just like, everyone's just got their shit set up and you just go and mingle with strangers and, like, you just drink with really drunk, like, strangers. And I'm like, this, you're not building value on this experience so far, but go on. So I don't want to know your hot take about tailgating.
So the thing about tailgating is that I think there was a golden age, which I happened to catch the tail end of in around 2009, when I went to a Detroit Lions game in Detroit. And like, my dad got tickets from this guy he worked with, and it was like, just come in, don't worry about it. Like, come to the tailgate, it's fine. And so we're just hanging out, having some beers, and my dad, being the good Italian gentleman that he is, you know, finds out about other good Italian gentlemen's for this guy named Joe, who apparently just sells homemade grappa out of the back of his van. This is true. And so my dad finds out about this grappa, and he's like, hey, I like grappa. Let's go see Grappa Joe. And so we go see Grappa Joe, just two, you know, regular ass Canadians being like, this is normal. And we walk up and we're like, hey, we heard you're Grappa Joe. Can you hook us up? And he's like, who told you that? These guys over here. And it's like, do you have any grappa? And Joe says, I might. And so he opens up his trunk and he's like, what do you want? And we're like, what are you, like, whatever you want to give us is fine, sir.
Grappa?
And so, like, he tells us about his, like, homemade distillery kit where he's, like, running copper wires out into his backyard through his basement window so that, like, the snow on the ground can, like, chill the alcohol and the distillation process. And he, like, gives us, like, these two enormous glasses of grappa. And my dad and I drink the grappa, go to the game completely wasted, and we're like, this is pretty great. I like tailgating. So the counterpoint to that is when we went a few weeks later, a few years later, when Detroit was better, the Packers were worse, and suddenly the fans weren't as friendly, and there was a lot more heckling going on, and we couldn't find Grappa Joe, and it was a distinctly worse experience. So I'm going to say the quality of your tailgating is directly proportional to the quality of the people you have around you, and whether or not they're chill with opposing fans, basically.
I believe it was Moses that said, you can't trust the Gen Pop, which is, you know, I'm worried. But I will say this, Luke Peristi at LinkedIn, I know you're a Green Bay Packers fan. Is it okay if I blow up your spot like that? I know people are extremely protective of their NFL teams.
No, it is known.
It's known. Yeah. So I was reading a music magazine, like a Alpha Male one time, and there was in this particular magazine, they had a section in each issue where a musician would post, look at me, such a millennial. they would submit a recipe that they like to make. And Mance from the band, what are they? They're like a bunch of dorks, but they act like, Verata, help me out here. The guy wears a Minnesota Twins jersey a lot. The Hold Steady.
Oh.
The guy from the Hold Steady shared this recipe, and it was a Green Bay Packers tailgating recipe. And this is the recipe. You take a six-pack of Miller High Life, which is a really great beer, in my opinion, and you dump that into, like, a cooking pot, put it over a fire, get it boiling. Then you add an entire stick of butter, okay?
I definitely believe this is from Green Bay so far.
Then you add an entire second stick of butter.
With
and
you?
Then you dump in a bunch of bratwurst. And then you even put the sauerkraut in there to get it, like, soaking in this butter and Miller High Life, you know, cauldron of dreams. And you take it out and you what do you call it, folks? I drink. What? you strain it, and then you take your sausage out, and then you put the sauerkraut on it, and that is the recipe.
And they say white people have no culture.
But honestly, like, there's no way you don't take a bite out of that sausage and see God. Like, that, like, that one thing alone is, like, it's such a heavy mark in the pro tailgating column that, like, the drinking with, like, angry sports fans is, like, almost balanced by it.
Yeah,
that recipe, like, activates 100,000 years of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's like, basically, you're like, I'm going to survive the winter based on this one sausage.
Yeah, like, I want to see an Ibex make that.
I do want to see a fucking Ibex
make that. Fucking Ibex. Where were we at this? Oh yeah, so Don Brennan, aka McScoop, is talking about, yeah, like, let's put a fucking stadium out by a strip mall in a farmer's field and just like, let's get everyone even more drunk. Like, clearly everyone's taking the LRT there.
a friend of the pod, Steve Onsens, correctly pointed out that Ottawa already has a tailgate and it's called the bus ride to the Canadian Tire Center.
Like, absolutely. That's
what it is. We've all done it. You've all been there. And if you've done it, you know what I mean.
We've all done the like extremely fun ride out and then the like extremely terse, silent ride back because we all have to piss extremely badly.
Yeah, you're like, man.
40 minutes and like everyone's talking and everyone's just like sweating.
Like, I've had
go to the bathroom at the Royal Oak on Albert Street, but like at the same time.
I've had to have the Lieutenant's Pump shuttle guy let me off early.
Like, this is where I lived in this bitch on Heron. Yeah,
Pinecrest is fine. Don't worry about it.
Oh, Moody Drive. That's me. I'll figure it out. Please, it's either this or getting arrested.